Hey, Deserving listeners. Today we have a special guest on the podcast, Alina Honda, and we are related. Alina is the Psychology in Seattle Quality Assurance Auditor. I had to look that up earlier this morning. We established your working title, your job title, months and months ago, and I forgot what it was. Quality Assurance Auditor. I'm pretty sure I got that from Googling, what do you call someone that does something like what you do? What Alina does is they will listen to all the episodes to make sure I'm not saying anything stupid or if there's an editing problem. And Alina also established all the timestamps, which are helpful for people to kind of skip forward or whatever. So welcome to the podcast, Alina.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Alina is also my older brother's oldest kid. So today we're going to talk about how you decided to become a therapist and your initial experiences of grad school. But first, I have some rapid-fire questions for you. Favorite Pokemon?
Chandelure.
Ooh, I don't even know if I know that one.
It looks like a chandelier Pokemon.
Ah.
It's very pretty.
Favorite video game?
Oh, that's not going to be rapid-fire. That's hard to guess off the top of my head. Right now, I've been playing the Persona series, so probably Persona 3 Reload.
Okay.
It just came out, and it's super good.
Is that a third-person...
Yeah,
RPG.
It's a JRPG. It's about some high school students that have to fight demons at night, and they've got
anime inspired.
Oh yeah, they have an anime of the game, so
yeah.
It's all out there. It's really good.
Favorite cosplay that you've ever cosplayed?
It's not a character, but I recently did a clown that I really liked. My friends and I've been doing some clown sonas, if you will. So okay. It's our clown persona, and mine is like a black and white mime outfit with some bright orange hair, and I really love that. It's super fun.
Yeah, your costumes are awesome, and I've seen as you've gotten older, you've gotten better at your cosplay. So you wore that at Sakura-Con or Comic-Con or something?
Yeah, Sakura-Con last year. I haven't been cosplaying too much recently just because... everything else with life, but but I do want to get back into it soon. I'm always thinking of ideas, and I was talking to a friend recently that even if I'm not actively working on a cosplay, I'll see a design I like, and I'm already trying to think of how I would make that come to life in different ways. So I'm always thinking about it, even if I'm not working on it.
I just realized that not all the lights are on.
Oh.
I was like, why?
So I turn on the lights, and now we can see your face. favorite food? I'm curious.
Sushi.
Sushi.
Yeah.
Just any sort of sushi.
Anything with salmon.
Okay.
Not smoked salmon, though. It has to be fresh, raw salmon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Favorite Psychology in Seattle episode, if you have one.
Oh. I don't know. I think, is it cliche to say the ones with Bachchan and Jichan, because I like learning about the family history while listening to them.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
Bachchan, Jichan, meaning grandpa, grandma in Japanese. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, absolutely. I could see how those would be really interesting. They were really interesting for me. The star on your head, explain.
It's my pimple patch. It like sucks up all the gross stuff in the pimple. It's really satisfying when you peel the sticker off. You can see it on the back.
Yeah.
But it also keeps me from just picking at it because I have a really bad habit of anything on my face, I'm picking at it. So.
Well, it's very honest of you. You could have just said it's a new fashion, and I would have gone with it. Final question, but most importantly, favorite uncle.
Well, Uncle Kirk.
Okay. So let's get into the very first question I have, which is, why did you want to become a therapist in the first place?
It wasn't something I originally thought of when I was like going to my undergraduate program. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew I should go to college and get a bachelor's degree. So I went and did that. And
so you're starting out 18 and you don't have any firm goals. I feel like you had some minor possibilities as goals.
Yeah, I was really interested in like Japanese language. I took a lot of that in like community college. So when I applied to undergrad, I put that as my field of interest.
Okay.
But even when I was applying, I think I knew that I wasn't going to pursue Japanese as a major. You know, I really like it.
And you're 27 now?
Yeah, yeah.
So this was 8 years ago? Nine years ago.
Oh, I feel old now.
Yeah, get used to that feeling.
And so I kind of stumbled through undergrad, got my degree, fell into corporate, did corporate life for a little bit.
So just kind of fell into it, not like this massive life goal. It was something that was available that paid the bills.
Right. It was like, okay, the pandemic's here, because I graduated right before that. And so the job market was pretty slim pickings at that time. I'd been working food service beforehand. And so when the pandemic rolled around and we were all inside and we had nothing to do, I remember looking at psychology programs then, and I think I asked you a little bit about it. I think I even talked to Bob without knowing who Bob was at the time.
Oh, did I direct you to talk to him?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was looking at different parts of psychology, but I wasn't really sure where in the field I wanted to maybe focus.
Yeah. I remember you thinking about criminal or forensic psychology.
Yeah, because I was in high school too. I was always interested in forensics, forensic psychology. But I mean, I was influenced by, like, my favorite show was Bones at the time. So I was like, yeah, that's cool. But I was looking at, like, neuropsychology, criminal psychology. And at the end of it, I decided that I wasn't quite sure. And wasn't sure enough to commit to applying to a school and following through with it, because it's such, like, a commitment.
Yeah. What was your hesitation?
Mostly getting into grad school. I think that was the biggest hurdle for me, because my undergrad grades, they were fine, but they weren't great. So I felt like everything I was looking at online was saying, oh, if you want to get into grad school, you need to be, like, doing 3.5, extracurriculars, internship, et cetera. And I didn't have any of that. So I was like, oh.
Where were you looking?
For a while, I was looking down in Oregon, like O of U, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like typical traditional state schools are going to have programs that are more academically rigorous, and the slots available are a lot fewer.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to get into. And they're typically not clinical. Mm-hmm. They're more research,
right,
and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there wasn't really a lot of master's options. It was mostly like PsyDs, which I thought it would be really cool to become another Dr. Honda, but it's a lot of money to put towards that without being sure. So maybe in the future we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you are hesitating because you don't know if you're going to be able to get
in. Right.
And you're also not entirely sure about the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So then what made it so that you decided to take the leap?
So after getting dissuaded by grad school, I still wanted to do something in the mental health field, but I wasn't still not sure what to do. So since everyone was still stuck inside, I don't know if I've told you about this actually a little bit, but I volunteered for a crisis helpline that was text-based. So I didn't do a whole lot of it because I signed up for the wait list and there was a lot of demand to be a crisis supporter, I suppose. So when I finally got the training, and it wasn't like super in depth, it was just a little bit, but by the time I got that, I was supposed to start like my real big kid job within like a month or two. So I didn't do it for super long, but it really had an impact in like helping people and seeing the effect I could have to help people and wanting to do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't been completely burnt out of the corporate world yet at that point.
Mm.
So I was like, oh, this is cool. This is nice. But I'm about to go and do my transcription job for 8 hours a day in a lab that has no windows. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Low barrier to entry at that point, since you're already doing it, it's paying the bills, low risk.
Yeah.
You got time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still early, mid-20s. So when you were doing that, which is actually why grad schools often will require people, applicants, mm-hmm. to try things, to volunteer mm-hmm. for things like that, including crisis lines, mm-hmm. because it will vet people to make sure that it is what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing to think you want to be a helper and a listener. It's another thing to do it and find that you either love it
mm-hmm.
or you're meh or you hate it. So that was a great idea. Did you just have that idea on your own?
I feel like being online through my generation, I'm so used to seeing different like online support groups that are like advertised as like, oh, if you're in a bad spot, text or call this number. And I never used them, but I was aware that they were out there. And I was such like a hard time in the world. I kind of wanted to do something aside from feeling like I was just sitting on my couch and playing video games for 24 hours a day, which I did do a little bit of, but yeah.
So then you started actually doing that work for a bit, for a few months before you had your next job.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it like?
It was hard. It was really hard. I feel like there wasn't enough training to help the really severe cases that would like text in.
I mean, what do they tell you to do? Because for me, clinically, training my trainees and supervisees takes months regarding suicide alone, let alone all the other crises that they could be.
Right.
The other thing is texting. I would be so annoyed with that. I mean, you young people, you know, you can go dee 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 dee.
Yeah.
But for me, I'll be like pecking, you know, I mean, not to be morbid, but, you know, they might have already taken action by the time I get it off.
Yeah.
So I would want to talk to them. It seems like it would kind of be a lot more wearisome to have to sit there and text.
Yeah. Texting doesn't take super long for me, but I did want to be, you know, timely for obvious reasons. But I also liked doing it over text because I had it gave me time to think and really think about what I said to the person before I sent it off, instead of just having to stumble along in like a live conversation. I was able to like look up different resources that the company had. And
I mean, was that the training, was to help people connect to resources?
Yeah, it was like, okay, let's see if we can like de-escalate from like a severe case to a point where they'll be able to get resources that will help them further on and less of an emergency situation, if that makes sense.
What were you supposed to do if they didn't immediately go to those resources and wanted to continue to text with you, and they were saying, I might kill myself? They might even be asking you, like, give me a reason to live, or why should I not do it, or something.
We had some, like, generic canned responses that were like, oh, in this situation, you should try and say this sort of situation, something like that.
But that probably doesn't feel very...
No, it doesn't feel very personal or like actionable. It feels...
What were you supposed to say?
It was trying to help them like see or direct them towards like what was still good, I guess.
So like, well, is there something you appreciate in life?
Yeah.
Or is there someone that you still are connected to? Or, okay.
Like focusing on like, oh, take some deep breaths, calm down.
Okay.
Or try and calm down. I mean, it doesn't really help to tell someone to calm down, but.
Yeah. Well, it might, depending. Yeah. So what did it feel to do that?
I liked helping the people. I wish I was able to do more, though, because it felt like it was so overtaxed, so quick. You don't talk to these people again. You don't know what happens to these people after the conversation either. So, you know, you're thinking about them still. Even if you don't want to, you're like, oh, man, I hope they're doing all right.
That's a frequent motivation to become a therapist. Some people will be in those shoes, or maybe they're a teacher or a guardian ad litem, or they are even working as a drug and alcohol counselor, and they're trained in that. But they get into things and they're thinking, oh, you know, there's another side to this, and I feel limited. I want to go there. And that kind of says something about, you know, how fit you are for this career, because if you have that drive, then that says something. So is that when you started to feel that the calling? Did you feel the calling? I don't know if you felt the calling.
Yeah, I would say that's probably around it, because I was like, okay, we're putting Band-Aids over these wounds, but that's not helping it, you know? We're just slapping a quick fix over it instead of actually helping these people.
Yeah.
So it's still good work, but it definitely wasn't what I had hoped it to be. I don't know.
What hopes did you have?
Yeah, I don't know if I had other expectations of like being able to help people more than I was at that time. I don't know.
I mean, I could imagine having hopes of at least occasionally actually helping people and feeling a resolution and having maybe even someone thank you
or something. Yeah.
So you're telling me that didn't happen very often?
No. You never heard back from, I mean, once it was, the communication was via like, for us, it was like an app that you would download and then the conversation would be through there. Like they'd text the number and that number would go to the app. So I didn't actually have like, they didn't have my number. I didn't have their number, which was probably for the best, you know, privacy and all that. But, once the situation was cleared, then that was it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What sort of situations would you hear from?
A lot of it was emotional distress, like teens that were in hard places with like self-harm or the idea of attempting that sort of pretty severe. I mean, to be put on a volunteer caseload, it feels a little overwhelming now that I think about it. But at the time, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's help these people. Like, if this is why the best way to do it with my resources and what I have available at the time, then that's what I want to do. But after that, I went, oh, okay. That was a lot. That was really a lot.
Did it take a toll on you?
I think so. Which is probably why there was such a gap between doing that volunteer work and then I didn't start looking again at grad programs for 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being a therapist, one, you're not typically wall-to-wall upper-tier crises unless you're looking for that sort of thing or you work in an agency that does that kind of work. Plus, you have the power to follow through and to get support, and it's your full-time job. I imagine you're sitting in your apartment during the pandemic and it's just you just, you know, doing this, and then you put your phone down and you're like, okay, I guess I'll just play video games.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have the wraparound experience that you get as a therapist. So it's not likely to feel that way. But well, along those lines, what are your hopes, say, for your career? You know, say 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you're in your career. What's gravitationally pulling you to go through all the hassle of going to graduate school?
I really want to be able to work with youth specifically, which is kind of why you steered me towards the couples and family therapy program that I did apply to and end up in, as aside from just like mental health counseling.
Yeah, the reason why I do that, and I give the same advice to everybody, is that if you want to work with kids and or teens, you can be a counselor, mental health counselor, or any other profession for that matter, social worker, psychiatrist, that sort of thing. But in my opinion, and I've seen a lot of counselors rub up against this, you want the option to use your training as a marriage and family therapist to also work with the family, the parents, the entire system. Whereas if you're a counselor, you could be trained in that, but you're not going to get as much training. And you're also not going to have the mentorship around that as much. And also working with kids and teens culturally, not only among families, but also in schools and society, as marriage and family therapists, we're often swimming upstream, trying to get everyone to recognize that the child's behavior or psychology isn't just in isolation. 99% of the time, it absolutely, there's factors in the current system that is, you know, that is contributing, if not completely just causing. Trying to get the parents to come in, sometimes they'll resist. Trying to get even the agency that you work for to allow you to talk with other people in the family. Because the way that funding works, they don't care about family therapy because that's the patriarchy. So they will pay for individual therapy because that's the tradition, that it's like, well, there's something wrong with that kid. So you got to fix that kid. But, you know, most of us understand that's absurd. So in order to be able to push back on all that culture and and actually help people, you are better off having a full marriage and family therapist degree and license. Because that's the other thing. You could say, look, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. This is what we do. It's another argument you can make, because you'll get parents that will say, I don't understand why you're asking me to come in, you know? And say, well, I'm a licensed family therapist. It's literally in my title, and that's what I do. And then people can make a choice as to whether or not they want to continue working with you. Whereas if you're a counselor, it's just, it's so hard to push back. And so a lot of people will just kind of give up and just treat individual kids. Not that you can't do good work with individual kids and teens. Of course you can. But, you know, like I said, so often you want to be able to meet with them. So that's why I always say, you know, it's probably a better idea. And when you're getting your degree and expertise in marriage and family therapy, it also gives you expertise in working with individuals. You can have a long career mostly having individual clients. So it's just broadening your options. Okay. So then you were convinced by me because I yammer. And when did that happen?
Probably 2022-ish.
So what gave you the confidence to take that leap? Because, you know, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of time.
Yeah. I mean, definitely you played a part in it.
How so?
Well, we had a talk once I came over to, we were just talking about my quality assurance admin duties.
Auditor, I think.
Yeah. And
right, I remember we were sitting right here.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm kind of interested, but I don't really know if it's something I want to pursue. And we talked about what was holding me back. And it was, like I said, a lot of the graduate school requirements. And I just kind of had this idea that, like, I couldn't do it. Or I was too, like, too old or so. I'm not too old. I'm not that old. But
well, so for the listeners' benefit, you know, if you want to maybe share some of those things, because I hear a lot of those things. And I think it comes from culture that will have a stereotype of graduate students being typically younger, which is like the way it's in the movies, I suppose. But at Antioch, particularly in the past, less so now, but still to some extent, most of our students at Antioch are 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Very few students are just out of grad school. So that's one stereotype that I think is helpful to push back on. Another one is, am I good enough? Grades? Am I smart enough? So what was the worry?
Yeah, mostly like being old, like too old, like you said. And then the grades was a big part of it because For transparency's sake, my GPA in undergrad was 2.7, and I graduated. It was, yay, I did it, but it didn't feel like a graduate school application GPA. So I was like looking at different like undergrad programs I could just pop in for a few classes to maybe raise my GPA. And
and you just figured, well, also you had heard from the state schools that there was no way, right?
Yeah.
No likelihood. They're looking at 3.5, 3.8.
Right. Kind
of, they're looking at the sort of super students that have been really working hard for their entire life to do something along those lines. So you're worried about that.
Yeah. And that was like definitely the image I had in my head of a graduate student was like someone who was always high achiever, good grades, good extracurriculars.
Yeah. So I told you that isn't the case at Antioch. And really, from my anecdotal experience, a lot of grad schools for master's program and even doctoral programs for a number of reasons. One, it's not highly correlated with eventual competency in the field. People with lower grades than yours, particularly if it was in the distant past, people change their circumstances. High school isn't very interesting, you know. So if someone has at least an average academic ability, then, you know, there's a path forward. Plus, being a therapist has little to do with academic ability and a lot more to do with your humanity, your drive, your listening skills, your wisdom, your life wisdom, your understanding of the societal injustices. That doesn't have anything to do with one's ability to take a test and memorize things and pay attention to a boring lecture about God knows what in high school, you know, or not be distracted by all the bullshit that's going on in high school so that you can concentrate on something in a class of 35 kids. And we understand that. And that's been our track record for a long time. So much so that we started looking at the science about the GRE, which is the standard test to get into graduate school, general graduate schools, you know, other than med school or law school. There's this GRE test. It's like SATs or whatever. And we looked at the science, and there was no correlation according to the consensus regarding one's GRE score and their success as a student and success as a therapist. So we did away with that a long time ago. So I was telling you that.
Yeah.
And how did you process that?
It was reassuring to hear because, you know, you're involved with that whole world. So I was able to take your word for it over just like, there's only so much my Google Foo skills will get me with finding different Reddit threads or people's anecdotes about applying. And it's like, okay, well, that's a good starting point, but it still doesn't quite get me over the hurdle.
What other worries did you have?
Financials. It's a lot of money to go to grad school.
Yeah.
And at the time I was working, I had moved on from the transcription job and I had been promoted to project coordinator within that company. And so I was kind of on a track to be program manager maybe project manager, not program manager. If I wanted to pursue that. And, I was feeling really burnt out by that whole scene. And there was also a part of me that really missed going to school. My senior year of my undergraduate, I kind of felt like it all clicked finally. Mm. I was like, oh, I see why people go to school now. Like, this is kind of fun. Like, oh, I'm able to do all my assignments and on time. And I hadn't been able to do that before. And so it's like, oh man, I really wish I was able to go back and kind of redo it almost.
Yeah, it's funny. I forget I had a similar experience. Mm-hmm. My enthusiasm related to that, what you're describing well, of just like, oh, I think I like school now. I was always just resisting everything to do mm-hmm. with school, even my undergrad. Mm-hmm. I remember when I graduated with my bachelor's, I vowed to never go to school ever again. Mm-hmm. I just said, don't ever consider it. It's so boring. It's so awful. Just commit now. Don't be convinced. And I found myself 2 or 3 years later applying to become a therapist, you know, going to graduate school. And I was astonished. I thought, what's happening? And then I worried about it. In fact, I was telling people, friends of mine, that I was going to do this, and they're like, you have told us to hit you across the face if you ever considered going back to school again. What's going on? And I'm like, don't hit me in the face because I've changed, but I think I have. And then once I was in graduate school, it was a completely different experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking forward to going to class. Mm-hmm. I was looking forward to doing homework. I showed up on time. I never missed a class. I always turned things in on time. I talked to my teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different experience because you're choosing it and you're mm-hmm. older too, right?
Yeah. So,
you know.
Yeah, it was a big change because even in high school, I really did not want to go to high school.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to go to school. Like, I would be sick so many times, they would still send me to school because you're probably not sick. You just want to get out of it, which was fair. I did do that a lot, like to the point, I think my junior year in high school, the vice principal had to be like, hey, if you don't show up to class, you're not going to graduate.
Oh, so you ran up against that.
Yeah. Which was kind of embarrassing. I mean, like, I felt like I always had to do so well academically and I wasn't, like, even to the point, I took a world geography AP class in high school. And it was like my sophomore year, it was my first AP class. And I almost failed out of it. Like, I remember the last few months of class, the teacher was like, hey, unless you turn in your homework assignments from the past year, you're not going to graduate, or not graduate at that point, but you're not going to pass. I had all my homework assignments, so I just pulled them out from my backpack. I just hadn't turned them in because I had this idea in my head. I was like, oh, well, if I don't turn them in, or if I turn them in now, they're going to get docked for however many points for turning in late. And I'd just rather not deal with that, I guess.
So the strategy was to cocoon and avoid.
Yes. Yeah.
And it also sounds like there's some depression.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I mean, I was diagnosed with like clinical depression at like 13, so pretty young. And I did go to therapy around that time. My therapist was I want to say Olympia, but that feels like a really far drive from where I was. So we didn't go very often, but I remember she was an interesting lady. She felt very holistic and not really my vibe.
What does that mean? Holistic.
Like the homework I was given was like about, I feel like I was given a tappy bear. Do you know what tappy bear is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was given tappy bear
as
one of my homework assignments.
Describe to listeners what a tappy bear is.
If I'm remembering right, it was like a stuffed bear, and you're supposed to tap on the bear where you hurt. And I'm not sure what the point of that was.
Yeah, someone asked me about this years ago on the podcast, and I did a little mini look into it. And from my memory, there's not a lot of science, but it could help.
Yeah.
But it has to resonate with the client. You also have to sell it well.
Yeah.
And make sure that the client is on board with it. It certainly isn't the only way to help people with these things. When I went to my first therapist, I was 19, and the therapist was super, what I'm guessing, psychoanalytic, and he sat on the other side of a desk, and he never asked any questions, and he listened well, but he didn't seem to remember. I don't know. He just didn't seem to be involved. You know, he was just like, hey, whatever you want to talk about, just get it off your chest, you know? And I thought, well, if I just keep talking, eventually he's going to tell me what's wrong with me. And he never did. And so on one hand, it made me feel at least accustomed to what therapy can look like or feel like. On the other hand, I think it planted a seed for me that, like, I want to be a therapist so that people don't have to endure that. Is that one of your motivations?
I think so, because like I really didn't find that helpful, unfortunately. So
you're not going to specialize in tappy bear?
No, probably not. Maybe I'll still have some stuffed animals, but not for that purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in high school.
Yeah. Oh, and then going to grad school and not wanting to go to school.
Right.
I remember after I graduated from college, Ji-chan actually came up to me and was like, hey, so are you going to go get your master's degree? And I was like, absolutely not. There's no way I'm going back to school.
So how did you receive that at the time?
I just kind of laughed it off. I was like, yeah, okay. I just finished, 12, 16 years of school straight. There's absolutely no way I want to go back to school ever.
Yeah.
Unless work pays for it, for like a master's like in business or something like that. Because that's kind of where I thought I would end up.
Okay. For me, experiencing that side of my dad, it's kind of a thorn in my side, but also a bit of a push and a belief in me or something. You know, there's a cost-benefit analysis to having a parent or a grandparent or someone in your life who does that sort of thing. You know, there's a balance, right? You don't want to push people over the edge. But you also, at the very least, want to throw out to people that they're capable of something, that it might be a good idea, you know. Because, you know, I feel like for some people, some kids, some young adults, they don't have someone or anything like that in their life. Yeah. And not that you need that.
Right.
But I think that it can help sometimes.
Yeah. He definitely planted that seed.
Okay.
Because my parents, I mean, they planted the seed for undergrad. And I did that. And I was like, okay, cool. I did it. I did what I was expected to. I'm done. And then Ji-chan was like, well, are you sure you're done? Like, maybe you want to go back? And I was like, no. And now here I am back in school. So
it's funny. So you're 2022 and you're hired by me to work for the podcast. And just to give a background on this, I think I've talked about on the podcast before. Over the years, 15 plus years of the podcast, I have had my fair share of thin skin moments with comments and emails that will ruin my day or week, or might even make it so that I'm tentative as a podcaster. You know, there's nothing wrong with considering what you're saying and how it impacts people, but it's another thing when every word, even just innocuous ideas, are hesitated to be uttered, you know, and it was causing a lot of problems. Oh, but it wasn't causing a lot of problems. It was manageable, but not great. And sometimes I would just go for months without even looking at comments. I just can't emotionally deal with it. Mm-hmm. And that didn't feel good because 99% of people in comments are fine, if not very interesting to me or worthy of me responding. And it just felt like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but it was the only way I could cope. Then the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial happened, and that was a whole new level of experience. I was getting attention from, you know, it took off on YouTube, and so I was getting like a lot of attention from a lot of people who didn't really know me, and they also had very firm opinions, mm-hmm. and apparently some kind of stake in the matter, even though they're not involved, they're mm-hmm. just fans, but it felt very personal to them. Which I understand on one level, but the places that they took it. And so I had this idea about hiring you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Stacy and I would talk about hiring somebody, but we thought just hiring just someone off the street, even someone we kind of know, mm-hmm. it's such a trust thing. Like, mm-hmm. because the employee would have access to all this behind the scenes information, they would be looking at all the comments, you know, there's a lot at stake. And what if that person you think is on your side, but it's not likely that they're going to try to get you or something, but you never know. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, well, Alita's family. So, and I've known Alina since they were born. So I think that's a perfect match, but I didn't know if you would want to is the thing, mm-hmm. because it's kind of a particular thing. But I threw it out to you, and how did you feel about it?
I mean, I was honored that you asked. Like, everyone talks about the podcast. Everyone's like, whoa, the podcast is so cool. And, you know, I'm also in that boat. I hadn't listened to it before. Sorry. But,
Sorry? Like you're invading my privacy?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, sorry. I didn't engage with it before this.
Oh.
But I mean, yeah, I was honored that you asked. And, like, I love YouTube, so... That was easy for me, and just like being able to help out, like, yeah, definitely. So
okay,
yeah,
yeah. I was really quite happy, and I didn't know how you would do with mm-hmm. it because I hadn't ever been your boss before. And I just figured, though, because as a person, you're very level-headed and not chaotic. And you make good choices, and you're smart and kind. So I figured, well, it probably will work out. And then when I hired you and trained you, because there's a fair amount of training. Mm-hmm. I mean, not tons, but some. Once I said, okay, go for it, you and I didn't have to talk about much for months, really. Every once in a while. You know, every month or something, I would call you on the phone and sort of talk at mm-hmm. you for about an hour about this new idea that I had or new consideration. And that would be it. And we haven't had one of those conversations in maybe a year or something.
Yeah.
And that was really great for me because that's the whole reason why I wanted you to do it to sort of be a buffer between mm-hmm. me and the world, just to sort of sign off on something. You're sort of like the person who eats the food to make sure it's not poison beforehand.
I'm the taste tester.
But it doesn't hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
You're just reading someone's criticism of someone else. But so that's one function. But another function is that you save me a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But if I have to spend a lot of time managing you, which mm-hmm. I've experienced before, mm-hmm. then it's not an overall benefit. I'm getting rid of some work, but I'm adding a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. But so the fact that you would just do it on your own and do it well was just a godsend, really. And you really made it so that I could interact with the comments and the emails mm-hmm. more freely in a way that I could never do before. So for the listeners out there, if you've noticed that I've been replying or hearting some of your comments on YouTube, it's purely because Alina has signed off that it's even okay to look at the comments. Whereas before, I would sometimes, but then I would avoid. But then if I went fully into it, it would inevitably expose me to something. And then I would retract for like 3 months or something. Mm-hmm. Because I want to. I want to, one, just hear what people have to say, and two, I want to interact. So you've given me that ability.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
So then you're hired part-time. You know, you have your regular job.
Right.
So what was that like? Well, let's take a break and we get back. Yeah. Let's talk about the rest of this.
I feel like I'm forgetting. I'm like, oh, yeah, working on the podcast did help me remind me that I like psychology and I might want to pursue that, you know? Forgot about that.
Is that what it was?
Oh, that was a big part of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then, so at that point when I hired you for the podcast, that would have been like almost 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And you have this seed planted by Ji-Chan about going to graduate school. You have this past experience, not only in therapy with the Tappy Bear, but also with the crisis line. You feel an internal drive to help people.
Yeah.
What are the kind of factors played in your life that would make you want to be a therapist?
Well, working on the podcast kind of put me back into that space. And thinking about psychology again and being like, oh, right, I did find this really interesting. And this is something that I had been interested in before. And why didn't I pursue that? And then I was reminded again by all those previous hurdles I had let stop me.
Right. So just to drive the point home, you listen to every audio episode in its entirety before it's released. And you have to be very meticulous as you're listening so that you don't miss any editing problems. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of psychology content that you're absorbing. Okay, so that was reminding you of a... And that's interesting to think about how many people might experience that, where you don't have the power or the wherewithal to pursue big career goals when you're younger. And out of necessity, you just sort of slot into a career that you might enjoy, but it's not really your passion. And then that pushes aside because, you know, you're working all the time. You're trying to pay your bills. And a lot of people, they get married, have kids, pets, you know, it just sort of displaces any chance to really stop and think. So for you, you had that experience of being reminded.
And I mean, my partner, my boyfriend, he's been super supportive during the whole thing. And, like during the whole process of applying and then the interview process, you know, he's been super great at just, you know, making sure that I know I can do it. You know, he's my biggest supporter. So, which is a big help with like running the house. So I don't have to do that myself, you know. When we had a cat, you know, he was a great cat dad and taking care of that and just all the little things, you know, he helps out with. So it's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're 4 or 5 weeks in.
Five going on six, yeah.
What does it feel like?
It's awesome. I mean, I love it so far. I think I'm going to continue to love it, but don't want to put words in my future mouth. So,
what do you love about it?
I love going to class. I love learning. Most of my classes, I'm in two classes right now. And one, I have five other classmates, so it's the smallest class size I've ever been in. And that's really cool. We do like a lot of readings about writing and psychology, and I just love learning about research papers and the different avenues to pursue different routes of research. I think is really cool. And then my other class, that's more of the deep stuff in terms of the program, I think, with the self as a therapist. And that's been really interesting too. That one's a bigger class size. That one's, I think I have 23 classmates in that one and two professors. So it's a bit of a kind of a interesting to see the small class size and then this much larger class. But despite it being a larger class, I think the professors do a really good job of engaging everyone. You know, we have our small groups and the class itself, or the community in it, has really kind of stepped up, I think, to make a community, because since it's all on Zoom right now, there's not any chance to naturally see your classmates. Like, you're just going to class, oh, see them in the hallway between classes or whatever. So a lot of the students have been setting up like meetings on Wednesdays or Sundays. There's an event coming up Friday that I think some of us are hoping to meet up beforehand.
Like meet up in person?
Yeah. something you suggested was setting up a separate Zoom meeting before class or after class so that anyone who's available can hop in, say hi before class. And we've actually been doing that since last week. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. Or 2 weeks now.
So you're taking, you said, the Self of the Therapist class. Mm-hmm. We call it Family of Origin work. It involves looking into your past, your childhood. It's a requirement right up front in graduate school to, one, learn theory, you're learning theory, but two, to start the process of formalizing your trauma recovery and your self-awareness exploration. Mm-hmm. Of course, you've already been doing this. Most people have to some extent, but this puts at the theory. This also connects it with work as a clinician. And you're 5 weeks into that. How does that feel so far?
It's kind of tough because there's a lot you have to grapple with that you hadn't really thought of before, or at least I hadn't really thought of before. One of the first assignments we had to do for the POT class was...
POT meaning yeah. Person of the Therapist.
Yeah, not...
P-O-T-T.
Yeah.
I mean, it's legal in Seattle, so what are you going to do?
It's fine. Yeah. was to make a genogram, or which is, I guess, the fancy psychology family tree. And there's a lot that goes into a genogram, including marking who has abused who in the family. And I think I still haven't filled that part of my genogram in because I don't want to think about it. Yeah, or really look at it and see what that means for... I know I'll have to in the future, but right now, week five, I'm not quite ready to face that, see what it means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fraught, obviously, and there's a lot at stake. If you acknowledge it, you got to acknowledge it. You got to say it. You got to deal with it, maybe. You have to admit it to yourself. It's hard. It can alter relationships. Graduate school almost always does. That's another thing that I tell people, and a lot of professors will tell people that, look, the relationships you have right now at the beginning of graduate school, all of them will be altered by the time you're done with graduate school. They might not be altered irreparably, but they will all be different because as you look at things just in yourself, also when you look at other people, clients, and you hear other students, you inevitably will think of connections to your own life.
Yeah.
And you might want to change some things. You also might see things in yourself. You know, your partner might benefit from you learning about yourself so that you're not annoying to him in certain ways. You know, that's you know, there's pros and cons, you know. So it can be really life-changing for a lot of people. They can emerge from graduate school just completely different people and completely different lives, completely different career, completely different new set of support system, new way of thinking. So you're at the precipice, if you will.
Yeah, I feel like I'm about to go free-falling. With a bungee cord, you know, so it's safe, but it is still scary, you know.
Yeah, the thing that I would say to students in this situation is, of course, you know, take it at your own pace. But there's no requirement to do anything about something that you're aware of.
Yeah.
You can acknowledge something and you can just put it aside. But you know it's there. It doesn't mean you have to take, you know, like a lot of people will say, well, if I acknowledge that my grandmother did this one thing, that means I have to confront her or tell everyone about it. And it might mean that, but it doesn't mean that at all as a requirement. And also it could be when you want to do it. I don't know if, does that help at all?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. My presentation's week 8, so I have a few more weeks before I have to.
You have a few more weeks to avoid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, you're at the very beginning, and what are you excited about?
I'm excited for the rest of the classes. I feel like we're just scratching the surface in these first few classes, which is understandable. You know, I'm a first-year grad student. There's a lot to cover, but I'm really excited to get into different systems of therapy in depth, like narrative therapy. I want to explore more of that. I don't know. I feel like there's so much in the sphere of therapy that I don't know. and I want to know all about it. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot, but I'm excited.
Okay. What are you looking forward to as a clinician, exactly?
Well, I'd like to have my own private practice in the future, to work specifically with queer and neurodivergent children or youth, teenagers, adults, all of the above.
There's a lot of work in that.
Yes.
One, there's a lot of people in that category. Two, a lot of therapists either passively avoid that because they just don't attract it. But also there are people who just flat out avoid it altogether.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't do neurodivergent or whatever. Or I don't even do kids. There's a lot of people who don't even do youth. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of need there. Mm-hmm. So what is it? Does it involve your heart at all in that desire to help people like this?
Yeah, I think so. Also wanting to be someone that like I could have used as a kid. Someone... I could have gone to that doesn't use Tappy Bear, but is still effective. so,
yeah. Well, I mean, what was it? It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I hardly remember it.
But from your memory, it wasn't. It was kind of simplistic and childish and one size fits all kind of therapy to you. Didn't really see you.
No, and I feel like I mostly used that experience of therapy as a means to legitimize my depression.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because...
So it made you worse?
Well, no, well, like, not worse, like legitimize in the
validated.
Eyes. Validate, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
No. Legitimize is great, too. Yeah. I was just I was determined to dislike this person. So you're saying that you felt validated, and that helps.
In a way, because it was like... it was like, oh, well, you know, you're too young to be depressed. Like, there's got to be other options or other reasons. Or, and I've been a chronically online kid since I can remember. so I was always like, oh, I don't know. I found like, I know the big thing is self-diagnosis now. But when I was a kid, I found like this checklist of symptoms of depression. And I was like, oh, you know, I kind of hit all these boxes. And it was like, no, like, well, it's something else. And so going to the therapist, and I was like, hey, can we just explore this? And she had a checklist just like the one online, and it was like, oh, well, looks like it. So
what did that feel like to be legitimized / validated?
It was good to like have a professional say, oh, you know, you're right.
Not just poo-poo you and say, you're just going through a phase.
Right, yeah. I think that kind of changed the course of my medical life, at least, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depression is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Shame about one's depression and thinking there's something wrong with you or you're just complaining can make it a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
Not having anybody, including yourself, pay attention to it can make it a lot worse. It can run away with itself and with some dire consequences. Yeah. I mean, I don't know... I've always been close to you, but not extremely in the know about everything. The two things that I'll say that I'm just wondering about is, one, you've always been a very mellow person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were very mellow as a 6-month-old child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were very mellow as a 1-week-old child, to the point where Mark, my older brother, discovered that whenever you cried, which was also... kind of quiet crying. You would cry like, I mean, there were times I'm sure when you really wailed, in the very beginning, you would just open your mouth, you know, and like nothing would come out. And you're just looking at, is Alina breathing? You know, and then what we would do, what Mark figured out, and I would do this to you too when I was watching you, is you were so small that, you know, Mark figured out that if you, have you heard the story?
I don't think so.
That you put you know, limbs down the side of, like, you know, legs here and arms here and head here. And so you were so small, I could hold you, your whole front torso on my hand, and you would just be draped over.
Yeah. Like a kitten.
Yeah. And you would instantly stop crying.
Oh, really?
And you'd be instantly soothed.
Oh.
It was the weirdest thing.
Interesting.
Like, you could be real uncomfortable and fussy, and then you'd be like, it was something about laying. Do you have anything like that in your personal with your boyfriend? Do you do that with him?
No, but I have a weighted blanket that kind of, I don't know if it's like the same
but
idea.
You were their weighted blanket in this scenario. Yeah, yeah, do you know what I mean? You were the thing weighting down on a hand.
Yeah.
So anyway, you've always been really mellow and in a good way. Mm-hmm. You've also been fairly confident in strange ways. Like at the reunion in Vegas, I'm, you know, just 2009, you're in your tweens and
maybe, yeah.
Your parents say, play violin for everybody.
You know, I was terrified.
This is like 70 Hondas, Honda family people.
Yep.
I was like, I wouldn't want to do that today.
Yeah.
Plus, you hadn't taken violin for very long.
No.
And violin is, there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
And you were somewhere on that learning curve.
Yeah.
And you played and you just went, okay. And you didn't complain. You just got up and played and it was great, you know? So I remember thinking, oh, because in the past, I would normally see you kind of shy away from stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there was also a part of you that was like, okay, if that's what we're doing right now.
I don't know that it was confidence, more of a, it will just be easier if I do it, get it done.
Yeah.
Block it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't be able to do that when I was your age. I would just focus on the anxiety and crumble. You know?
Do you remember there was one time the family had a surprise party for me? I think I was like 6 or 7.
Was I there? Or was it with your friends?
Well, it was with family because it was at Grandma Kozuko's apartment building.
Oh.
And I only have a photo to go off of, but I just remember being so surprised.
I do remember this.
That I immediately went to the bathroom and burst into tears.
Yeah.
I was so scared.
I get it. Yeah. The amount of attention, you know, plus like 75% of the people in that room, you didn't know.
No.
I knew them because they're extended family, but mm-hmm. you were young. You didn't know these people. But yeah, I feel like I do remember that. We were out there, I think, for Grandma's 88th birthday.
Yeah.
And it coincided with your birthday.
Yeah.
I remember hiding behind an ottoman or something. And it's funny that, people have to be careful about shit like that because, you know, surprise parties are, you know, when was the last time you heard a semi-shy 7-year-old child say, I sure wish I have a surprise, you know, kids don't, that's not what they're looking for.
Yeah, now I'd be super down for a surprise party, right?
But not at that age, you know? But yeah, you've always been real, you know, like when your cousins, who mm-hmm. are more active than you, Jessica and Michelle, you would be up for participating in the chaos as a kid, but you would never be starting the chaos, you know? So it wasn't like you were a lump on a log. You would have fun, but you weren't the instigator or the problemed student or the kid. You were the one that would keep it together for the most part. The other factor that I remember is that you had been cyberbullied in high school or junior high, early high school.
Yeah.
And you had a group of friends who had just decided to turn on you or something. Mm-hmm. You know, this is when that kind of thing was getting into full swing.
You know,
MySpace or whatever. I don't know where you were.
We used Tumblr. Yeah.
Tumblr, okay. Yeah. And these were kids at school that you knew.
Yeah.
And somehow I found out or you told me or something that you were just going to disavow. You're just going to avoid the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking with you and saying something like, you know, what's going on or what happened? And you're just, I'm just done with it. And I remember saying something like, well, you certainly can be if that's what you want to be. But there's also another option of, because it seemed like, I don't remember all the details. Maybe, do you remember these?
I don't even remember, honestly.
You don't remember any of this?
No.
Yeah, I think I've talked with you about this before. The vibe that I remember was that you were just going to shut down and isolate completely. It wasn't like you had another option.
Yeah.
And I was saying that you could do that if you want, but there's no reason to do that as a default because there's nothing wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to be friends with them anymore, fine, but be friends with nicer people.
Yeah.
Or go to those people and say, did I do something wrong?
Right.
Like, what's going on? Or yell at them and say, you guys are mean.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call you out. I'm going to take screenshots and humiliate you or whatever. You know, do something. Get angry.
Yeah.
Get active. Don't sell yourself short. Don't give up. There's no reason to give up because there's four mean girls. So you don't remember any of this?
My memory of middle school, high school is very hazy. Huh. Yeah, I don't remember a lot of it.
Maybe your mom would remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, does that sound like something that could have happened when you were like 14 or something? Yeah. And then later, you had a whole new kind of group of friends, a bunch of alternative people, the way that I perceived it. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, well, let's take a break and we get back. I want to get in some. All right, back from the break. So when you used the bathroom, did you spray yourself like that one time? tell that story.
Not this time. I think it was maybe not the first time I came over, but the first time I'd like been in the downstairs area where you record.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, using the bathroom, doing my business, and I go up, I stand up to flush, and, you know, instead of looking on the side of the toilet like a normal handle would be, I saw a looks like a handle on the side of the bowl, and I was like, oh, well, that must be it. So I just twisted it all the way to max and sprayed my entire front with the bidet.
And the wall behind you.
Yes.
It's a bidet, and it, you know, for bathrooms that don't have outlets, electro outlets by the toilet, there's this kind of bidet that is just powered by water pressure, and there's kind of like a motorcycle accelerator, and you just twist it, and so in order to do that, you would have been standing over.
Like bent over, yeah.
Right, and then you just got sprayed, and and then you came upstairs, and you're like, so well, what did you say to me? I think he said, so I just found out that you have a bidet and you're just like covered in water.
Yeah.
And there's something about being sprayed with bidet water that feels dirtier, but it isn't. It's just another supply of water.
But it's not like it came from the bowl water itself, you know?
Yeah. Or someone's butt.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So ever since then, I've told people, that's a bidet. Use it if you want, but don't if you don't want to be sprayed in the face.
And everyone goes, yeah, I can tell it's a bidet.
Oh, really?
I bet, yeah.
No, it's a little weird. It's because, you know, typical bidets are electric and there's just a button.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyway.
Plus, like a knob.
A lot of Americans don't know what a bidet looks like in general.
Everyone should have one.
Okay, so you didn't spray yourself this time. No. All right. I mean, that's what you wanted. So getting back to your aspirations. So 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you're in private practice and you are working. Well, why private practice exactly?
I think it would give me the most freedom to choose clientele, as well as just making a higher wage in private practice. So
Absolutely. Yeah. The pros and cons are that you are alone and don't have to deal with the drama, but you're also kind of isolated. So you have to work hard to be more connected. So regarding, you know, neurodivergence and queer youth. So imagine you have your client load and, you know, 25 clients a week kind of thing, and you're working with the youth and their families probably a lot of the time. And, you know, there's a wide range of issues. There's maybe issues that you can relate to, but there could be issues of a greater nature, abuse happening currently. So when you imagine that future, what does that feel like to you?
It feels secure, very like stable, and something that has really like long-term possibility, which is something that I am considerate of when thinking of different jobs and careers and all that. But I think the main thing is that it feels like good to know that I'd be helping people. Yeah. A paycheck would be nice, and, you know, having my name on a sign or something, that would be kind of cool, but that's not the reason I want to pursue it. There are other options to that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The experience I'm looking forward to you experiencing is, and this could happen quite early at your internship in a couple years, that experience you had in therapy where you had the therapist validate you. It's not hard for us to do that. And it goes so far with people. And then to go further of validation, validating things that people don't even know that they need validating. really listening to them, really paying attention to them. You know, so many people are not paid attention to enough. Even people with good enough parents just mm-hmm. don't get the time that they want with someone that knows them and understands them and sees them and cares. And to be able to provide that for people long term, it's a very meaningful and wonderful experience. At the end of the day, you think, wow, you know, like when I became a therapist, I noted that at the end of the day, after being a therapist all day, I had so much energy because mm-hmm. I had experienced so much life. Mm-hmm. Other jobs, I'd be so tired because I'd be not experiencing life, you know? Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to you having that mm-hmm. experience.
Yeah.
Where it's unsullied by outside things, because mm-hmm. you're in complete control of those sessions. It's mm-hmm. your office. It's your hour. No one can mess with it. And again, that long-term relationship, you know, really being able to be there. What sort of situations do you imagine yourself helping with?
I haven't thought too much about like a specialization or what I would want to specifically deal with. But definitely like anxiety, social anxieties, depression, social skills, just kind of the gamut there, mm-hmm. I think would be really fulfilling to work with, and just pull from like my own experiences with that as well, I think would be really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you'd be great because the level of relatability,
yeah.
you know.
That, I've been there.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
Really. And you still are in that cultural world, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. gaming world and those kinds of spaces, geek spaces, if you will, mm-hmm. that I could imagine people, one, the families just dying to work with you because mm-hmm. it's hard to find a therapist like you. There's more and more of them mm-hmm. lately, but still on average. Two, the youth actually really like, oh, I didn't know that. I thought we were going to do Tappy Bear.
And yeah.
You actually know
yeah.
my situation. You're yeah. kind of still, you have a couple toes still in this mm-hmm. situation. I didn't know I'd have someone relate to me in this way.
Yeah, I'm also hoping that in the future I can learn a little bit more about like game therapy, both mm-hmm. tabletop and maybe even video games. Mm-hmm. I know that's kind of an up and coming thing in the psychology field for therapy, and I want to check more on that out. Every year I go to like a convention called PAX West, big video game convention, and last year they had some psychology books at one of the vendors, so I thought that was really cool, and I picked some up and. Mm-hmm. But I haven't had the time to read them yet, so.
Have you read the books that I gave you for Christmas?
I am almost done with Shrill.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
The Lindy West book.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I ended up following her on Instagram, actually, before finishing the book, so I can see what she's up to now.
Yeah, that book's amazing.
Yeah.
And she's super funny, but also, mm-hmm. like, mind-blowing,
yeah.
really. And she has a super interesting story to tell about, mm-hmm. you know, Gamergate and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And she's kind, too,
yeah.
to people that attacked her, you know. And it's also a Seattle story.
Yeah,
Stranger
I thought that was cool.
And Dan Savage and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know we've talked about this on the podcast. I had a number of episodes with Adam and Adam from Game to Grow mm-hmm. for Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. tabletop, RPG, therapy. I also had another friend of mine slash a student at Antioch that I knew who uses Minecraft.
Oh, really?
For therapy.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
We reran that episode recently. You don't review the current reruns. So there's a lot of movements along those lines of meeting kids where they're at. And also... Mm-hmm. Engaging people in other ways other than sitting across mm-hmm. a room in chairs and talking. Mm-hmm. There's so many other ways to facilitate change. Mm-hmm. And there are issues that can't really be worked on if you're just going to sit across a room in chairs and talk. Mm-hmm. But just admit it, you just want to play games at work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be the ideal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I played a lot of Lego with yeah. kids. It'd be like half an hour into the session, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's right. I'm working. I need to. So final question, what worries do you have about grad school or being a therapist?
Let's see. I'm worried about taking on more than I can chew, buying off more than I can chew with the program. I'd like, right now I'm only doing two classes, but I'd really like to get that up to three or four a quarter.
Why? So you can get through it faster? Or?
Yeah.
Because there's no reason inherently to do that.
But I'd really like to get through the program in 2 to 3 years, ideally, just so I can get started in the professional world a bit faster.
Well, I think 2 years is out of the picture.
Yeah.
But three.
Yeah. And if it takes longer than that, that's okay, too.
Yeah. Do you think you can manage more classes?
I think so.
After having this situation?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to experiment with three classes next quarter, see how that goes. Because right now, I feel like I've got a pretty good balance between work, school, life. I think I could maybe do a little bit more on the catching up with work side, but I'm figuring it out as I go, so yeah.
And do you have any worries about being a therapist?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in the program, a lot of the time we get asked, what would you do with like a client like this or with this information in a client setting? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea what I would do at this point because I feel like I'm so far from being ready to sit in front of a client.
So nothing comes to mind?
What do you mean?
So there's a spectrum, you know, I've seen a lot of students. There's a spectrum between your end of the spectrum, which is kind of frozen in confusion or fear or uncertainty, which I think is a reflection of your personality to some extent. There's the other end of the spectrum of people who are narcissistically in love with their own thoughts and will have all sorts of ideas because they don't have those kind of checks and balances and they just feel like, well, this emerged with me, therefore it's a golden idea and I'm just going to move forward with it. And there's obviously a middle ground where you need to have some confidence that you're likely to come up with something in light of where you're at in your program. Mm-hmm. And yet it might not be the best thing, but I don't know, fuck it. I'll just allow myself to at least go with my gut instinct right now. And you know, like that needs to be there because if you don't trust anything in your gut, then it's going to be hard to do anything.
Yeah.
So having said all that, I've obviously taught a lot of students in your category. There's a fair number of students that are like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And in a lot of ways, it's easier to work with as a professor because I'm not having to tell someone to cool their jets regarding their confidence, you know? It'll come is the thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of good therapy involves doing nothing, honestly, you know, like sometimes people that want to do a lot are actually messing things up. There's that too. I assume you have confidence in your listening skills. Do that, you know, next time that comes up, try that on for size. You know, they give a vignette and it's real complicated, you know, it's all these kind of details and just allow yourself to brainstorm. I would love to be there and listen. Maybe something more later, but I just want to try that instinct, because you know, we can't be up here as a therapist most of the time anyway. It has to come from humanity and from love and connection and understanding as two human beings. And when you're in that space, one, you're very helpful to people. Two, it's so much more fluid as a decision-making process as a therapist, because you're not doing all these like calculations and like, oh, what does the research say? And you know, you can do that at sometimes and maybe later after session, but in the moment. So maybe that'll help to feel like you're in the right flow of things, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And just as I get further along, I'm hoping that I learn a little bit more about the program, like the methods of modes of therapy, I suppose.
I don't know. That might happen. Yeah. It seems like that would be something that you would be instructed on. But therapy is so amorphous.
Yeah.
that it might be a while.
Yeah.
And for sure, press your professors mm-hmm. when it feels like it's at the right time by asking, so, okay, but what are we supposed to do?
Right, yeah.
I get it, but mm-hmm. when a client comes to us, how do we apply this?
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to ask that mm-hmm. question. But I wouldn't be surprised day one of your internship, you're still kind of in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's normal. But again, you can rely on listening mm-hmm. and caring.
Yeah.
And then after your first session, you kind of have a little bit of the landscape. Then you go to supervision or your classmates and you brainstorm about, okay, what sort of things could I do? Mm-hmm. So even though you don't know what to do, but once you're there, then, yeah. you know, you'll start applying specific, because that's the other thing. It's like, how do we tell trainees what to do in all situations? It's mm-hmm. it's too hard. So
there's no one answer fits all.
Yeah. So you're worried that, but do you have confidence that 5 years from now you'll have it together?
I hope so.
But you're worried you won't.
Yeah.
And I think that's normal too. Yeah. I think and it's really, to me, the glory of this profession. It's so complicated that you'll never master it, so to speak. It never feels completely yeah. comfortable. And it's always challenging. It's never mm. boring.
Yeah.
So pros and cons, I guess. Mm. Do you have any other worries?
I'm worried about getting burnt out.
Mm.
Hopefully not anytime soon, but I know that social work is a very heavy profession to be in. There's a lot to take on. I'm worried about getting bogged down by everyone else and not listening to what I need to take care of myself to continue doing the good work.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy for me to stretch myself too thin trying to please or fix everybody. And I know that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Keep monitoring that.
Yeah.
I think that's a constant
mm-hmm.
pressure
yeah.
on us. I think particularly in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that in my experience, I didn't experience that sort of thing. I know that some people do, but it always feels, I get that question a lot, like, isn't it overwhelming or don't you get burnt out? It's different, I think, once you're in the role of a therapist, because you have so much power and ability to actually do something about it. You know, burnout can often be a product of being faced with difficulties that you can do nothing about. And if you have good education and good mentorship and a good instinct and you've set your career up right, it never feels like it's too much, because it's like, well, let's get back in there. I feel confident in these three bullet points with this client, and I'm playing a bit of the long game, and I'm fairly confident that things are getting better. They're slowly getting better, but they're getting better, and that feels good, you know? So I wonder if once people get in, you know, yourself, you get into the profession and you feel like you're over that initial hump, maybe at month six into your internship or something, it feels different. You know, it's not like you're on the texting with people in crisis and you're right. just like, what do I even do here?
Right.
Here's a resource. That doesn't feel, you know, as a therapist, you have so much, especially when you're talking to the parents as well, there's like so many levers mm-hmm. you can start pulling, you know, and there's a process, you know, build the relationship, get to know them, gather the data, diagnosing, advocating, you know, communicate. There's mm-hmm. like, you can't wait to get into it, right? There's always something to get into. Not to say that it's something just not to monitor for yourself, mm-hmm. but yeah. And the other part of it is, you know, as you say, paying attention to your mm-hmm. own needs.
Yeah.
And that is very important, just as a therapist and burnout is concerned, but also just as a clinician who is trying to model things, you know, mm-hmm. and being leading the way, right?
Yeah.
You know, you'll have clients that will have that issue as well. And to be able to say, at the very least, hey, I struggle with that too, but then also, here's what I do. You know, I just yesterday I was doing that, but then I did that, and they're like, oh, and they're looking at you like, oh, okay, I get that. And also it has to do with having a really good, you know, mentorship, supervisor, colleagues, therapist,
in that can, all you have to do is sort of raise that flag and then they know to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, making sure that you have that kind of system set up, I think is good. So final question, when you were first born, you were indifferent to me as an uncle. And incidentally, you were born right in the middle of me in graduate school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, you would have been born in the beginning of my internship.
Yeah.
You know, you were indifferent to me at first. And then later on, you were oh, fine with me. Then you hit this age where you were terrified of me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this at all?
Because
you were like 1, 2 years old.
Yeah, I feel like I remember being told that I was terrified of you.
Yeah.
And I remember specifically that it was your long hair.
Yeah.
That scared me.
Right. Yeah, I had thick, long hair. Mm-hmm. And it was heartbreaking because, you know, I would walk in to your house and sometimes you wouldn't have seen me and you'd just be like doing your thing. And then all of a sudden you'd see me and you'd be like, you'd run away. Like it wasn't, kids can get shy sometimes and you just think, well, you know, they're just being shy. They're shy. It was me. Like you didn't do it to anyone else. It was me. And I saw myself as a fun uncle. I thought, what is happening? You got over it though.
Mm-hmm.
I have a memory. I'm not sure if this is when things changed, but I have a distinct memory of we were at 4th of July in Bellevue and we were playing a game together of some like peekaboo or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, okay, Alina's okay with me now. So that was a very trying time for me.
Yeah.
Well, Alina, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And we might have you back get a check-in maybe 6 months or a year from now. People will probably want to know how you're doing.
I'll be around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not too far.
Right. Listening to all the episodes and tasting all the food to make sure it's not poison.
Exactly.
For me. Yeah. For my very thin skin and fragile ego. Maybe that should be the name of your job, like Fragile Ego Manager.
Shield of the podcast.
Shield of the podcast.
Yeah.
And everyone out there, please take care of yourself because
you deserve it. You really, really do.